50 years ago, the first successful bone marrow transplants from a donor who was not the recipient's identical twin were announced. This incredible breakthrough was in large part thanks to researchers right here in Wisconsin. Dr. Paul Sundell is a professor of pediatric hematology and oncology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. As a student, he worked in the lab at UW-Madison of Fritz Bock, who did the first bone marrow transplant. Dr. Sundell, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much, Judith.
What do we use bone marrow transplants to treat today?
The primary use of bone marrow transplants is to help patients that have leukemia. But bone marrow transplants are also done to treat a number of other problems, including a variety of more rare bone marrow function problems, like the absence of an immune system or the inability of the bone marrow to do its job, which is making blood.
And how successful is the procedure usually?
The success has continued to improve over the past 50 years. In current technology, enables bone marrow transplants to be successful roughly 60 to 70% of the time when the bone marrow is coming from a separate person than the patient who's the one that needs the bone marrow.
And we'll talk about that particular development in a bit, but how many bone marrow transplants a year might be performed in the United States?
About 15,000 done annually in the United States, and more than twice that overall worldwide. Mm. So it's really been a major advance in treatment of truly fatal diseases for which no other therapy is available.
And before the discoveries of 50 years ago, what was the treatment and prognosis for people, especially with leukemia, which you said is one of the most common uses for it now?
Right. So bone marrow transplant is one of the approaches that's used now to treat leukemia, but it's focused on treating leukemia for which the standard chemotherapy approaches aren't really successful at all. So over the past 50 years, the advances in leukemia treatment have enabled us in the pediatric setting to provide curative therapy for 85% of children with leukemia. Back in the 1960s and 50s, it was unclear if any children with leukemia could really be cured. Bone marrow transplant played a role in curing many children with this disease, and it's still used frequently, but only for those children who can't be cured with the more standard conventional approach that doesn't require bone marrow transplant.
Hmm. So, Dr. Sundell, you were an undergraduate at UW as these advances were being made 50 years ago. Take us back to that time and what the work was that led up to developing successful bone marrow transplants.
Much work had been done the decade before in research laboratories in a few centers in which bone marrow transplants could be used in mice in order to treat immune problems or to treat leukemia. But the problem was trying to get this to work in the human setting, where people who needed a bone marrow transplant didn't have an identical twin who could donate bone marrow to them. And any time bone marrow is given from any donor to a patient who isn't an identical twin, there can be a very strong immune reaction where the patient can reject the bone marrow, but more importantly, the immune cells in the bone marrow can potentially reject the patient to cause terrible damage to organs within the patient. And it was research really led by Fritz Bock, a geneticist here at UW who joined the faculty in 1965, who invented at that time a really unique test that was the equivalent of a bone marrow transplant in a test tube. And by studying this in a test tube, he could understand whether two people picked at random or from within a family would reject each other's cells or they'd be able to accept it. And this matching test was one that was published and made very accessible to the rest of the world in 1966. And in 1968, he used that test to identify a donor for a child with a deficient immune system who needed a bone marrow transplant, a child from New York, who came to UW. Fritz used that test and picked one of his siblings as a perfect donor for this transplant and led the UW transplant team in August of 1968 to do this first successful transplant.
Dr. Paul Sandell is a professor of pediatric hematology and oncology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. As a student, he worked in the lab at UW-Madison of Fritz Bock, who did the first bone marrow transplant. And so there was this idea that if they could figure out how to allow for basically non-identical bone marrow to be transplanted and not be rejected kind of both directions, that this would open up much more possibility for this. What had to happen for that bone marrow to not be rejected and not to attack the host body? What had to be involved in the transplant to prevent that?
The first was this matching test that Fritz devised that enabled you to pick a donor who was matched for the important genes that would control transplant rejection. But even when the donor was selected that way, the patient needed to receive some drugs that would suppress whatever immune response that patient might have and slow down whatever weak rejection reaction might still occur. And it was that combination of the correct matching and the correct drug treatment of the patient that really opened up the door to successful bone marrow transplants and is enabling 15,000 a year to be done in the U.S. today.
I have to imagine that taking this from, as you said, mice and then a test tube and then to actual human beings had to be incredibly stressful because these were lives that were at stake. What was it like for people as these early transplants were done, waiting to find out if they were going to be successful or not?
The entire world was buzzing when these first transplants became public because the implications for this in treating both rare and some common disorders really opened up very widely. It then required quite a bit of additional clinical sophistication to be able to use the technique on the thousands of patients annually that are receiving them. But it was that combination of the correct drug treatment and the correct matching that really made it possible. And at the time, the initial transplants were done for these children with rare disorders who didn't have functional immune systems, and so they needed the cellular engineering of receiving a healthy bone marrow from a donor. But the real goal was to be able to use this to treat leukemia. And the way it works to treat leukemia is that when you give the donor bone marrow, you're giving healthy immune cells from the bone marrow, from the donor. And those healthy immune cells have the capability of attacking the cancer. And that's really been the key to opening up a very important field of ongoing clinical advance known as cancer immunotherapy. It was really the first example of using immune cells to attack cancer. And now in 2018, cancer immunotherapy is a standard part of the treatment of many, many cancers in both adults and children. And all of this has really become possible because of that initial bone marrow transplant work that was initiated here at UW by Fritz Bock.
Wow. So clearly in the last 50 years, there have been, well, there was the tremendous discovery and implementation, but then many developments since then. What is on the horizon, Dr. Sandell? What's the next step in this field to make it even more effective and hopefully treat even more conditions?
Yes. So there are two main pathways. One is still the pathway of using immune cells from healthy individuals and giving them to patients in the form of bone marrow transplants or in the form of taking only those immune cells that are going to be important in killing the cancer and giving them to the patient. And there are two very exciting protocols being led here at UW, one by my colleague Ken DeSantis, who is taking a particular kind of immune cell from a donor and giving them to an appropriately matched patient to try and kill the neuroblastoma. The other protocol is one being led by my colleague Mario Otto, who is taking the bone marrow from a donor and taking out of it those cells that could cause this rejection reaction and allowing only those cells that cause the bone marrow to do what we want to go into the patient. The separate pathway, though, and the one that's really grown most dramatically, is to use these concepts to manipulate a patient's own immune cells. what can we do with drugs or genetic manipulation to help a patient's own immune cells now turn against a cancer that was previously growing in that patient? And one example that's gotten much public interest in the past few months is a process called CAR T-cells, or chimeric antigen receptor T-cells, where the T-cells have been modified using a virus somewhat similar to the HIV virus. But the healthy T-cells have been modified by this virus to give them the capability to selectively see the cancer and go and destroy it in that patient. So that's one approach that's being led here at UW by my colleague Christian Capitini. And we're seeing some great progress in that using an approach that's been approved by the FDA just last year.
Wow. Well, really interesting to find out about the history, especially here at UW, and the future in bone marrow transplantation. Dr. Sandell, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Judah.
Dr. Paul Sandell is a professor of pediatric hematology and oncology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. As a student, he worked in the lab at UW-Madison of Fritz Bock, who did the first bone marrow transplant 50 years ago.